to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Lone Wolf Picks, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley. Just brought Weber on the board. SP Futures down 11. SA Futures down 44. Do we have Mr. Lou with us?
Hi, I'm on. Good morning.
All right, man. Rumor has it that you were listening to the show yesterday. You sold the NASDAQ up 60 and bought it back later down 360 for a 420 profit, Lou.
No, I waited until I saw the results of the SpaceX test and backed off.
Did you hear your buddy's comment?
No, I missed it.
It's something about it was a success or something. RIP number 10 or whatever. it made it down, then blew up, right?
One of the interesting things about those tests is that, you know, he just broadcasts the whole thing live, so you. I mean, you can tell as you're watching it that there's something going wrong. Something's going wrong. And on this one, you know, as it came down and was landing, I watched it come in, and I'm going, that thing's on fire.
Well, that's a problem.
And it touches down, and it's burning. I mean, it's clear there was a fire on one side of it. They tried to hose it down with one of the... water sprays that they have on the pad, but it apparently looked like it landed off center. Again, you can see the circular rings on the pad where the target is, and it landed just far enough away that this spray of water that they were trying to put on the fire, I think, couldn't quite reach it. And then, you know, whatever it was, 2 minutes later, the fire looked like it was out, but 2 minutes later it explodes. And I'm going, well, I give a lot of props to their engineering people because they, you know, this is the way you test. But this reminds me an awful lot of the, you know, the testing that used to go on in the testing that went on in the early Mercury and Atlas programs.
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah.
You have these rockets on the pad that just blow them, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and the thing just explodes, or it gets, you know, 10 feet off the ground and then it slowly falls back. And you know, blows up, and I get it. I mean, if you're this is a very effective way of testing your ideas, but it's a little disheartening to watch this thing just, you know, this very complicated piece of technology worth a lot of money, just watch them one after another go down on the test pad.
Lou, simple question.
They are by the way supposed to take some billionaire up for an orbit around the moon in this thing by 2023. So I hope that guy's watching, and if I were him, I'd be packing on a few more life insurance policies.
I think I'm setting that one out for a few more years.
Lou, when a rocket goes up, we're not talking about a rocket that some kid would have where there's one. Usually they'll have three or four, you know, individual thrusters on the bottom of the thing. How does the thing steer? Do they vary the thrust out of the various thrusters, or what?
Well, actually, there it's called gimballing, and there is some minor gimballing on most of the modern rockets like this. Liquid fuels, that is. I mean, if you watch some of the space shuttle launches, you could see the motors in the back of the shuttle gimballing. Now, the solid thrusters on the side did not. But they steer by steering rockets, either gimballing the main motors or by having thrusters further up the rocket, like say on the nose, that'll push it, and you'll see those on the Starship working. Or they have, and so some of them have fins, small fins that will actually, once the thing gets going, I mean, it's hard to imagine, but the shuttle I have a couple of, I think I told you I have three or four friends who are astronauts with shuttle rides. The shuttle is actually going 100 miles an hour before it, or just after it clears the tower, straight up. And those fins will work with that kind of airflow. And so they could steer it with the fins. But it's mainly done with rocket gibbling the main rocket motors. They don't move very much, but they'll move slightly. And with steering motors on the side that'll, you know, put up reactive propellant that'll move the nose slightly.
Well, it looks like it's barely moving when it clears the tower. I mean, because big things, when you see them moving, they look like they're slow and they're not. So you're saying the thing's actually moving pretty good when it clears the tower.
Yes, exactly, because it's so big.
But, yeah, I mean, it looks like it's barely moving. Right,
I know, but it's a big ship, and when the solid, I mean, on the shuttle anyway, when the solid motors kick in, you literally get a bound as the thing jumps up. But yeah, they're going, and you know, within what, 30 seconds, they're at the speed of sound, again, going up.
Yeah.
So there's a pretty good acceleration, and if you've got fins on that, at that speed, your airflow will give you some control.
Did you ever hear of a guy named Dr. Nicolades? Way in the back, in your distant past?
That name doesn't ring a bell.
He was a guy that was one of the teachers at the Space Tech and Society class I took at Notre Dame. And this is classic, of course. That this was a class for all the guys who were in aerospace. I mean, they beat the crap out of those guys, right? I mean, in terms of study. So they had like one class that was somewhat of an easy one, where they'd go and they'd make kites and paper airplanes and wing them off the balcony at Washington Hall, which is a theater place. All of a sudden, of course, all the other guys find out about it. So there's like 300 people showing up because it was an A. But the Notre Dame wasn't about to mess with it because they got so much money from ROTC, ROTC, for those who know what that means, that they said, okay, just let everybody come. And I took it. I thought it was the most fascinating class I ever took because they actually had three guys that had worked for NASA. One was ahead of NASA for a while. All spoke for, well, semesters, whatever, from September to December. Each guy took like 6 weeks. This Nicolades guy went through a whole routine about, you know, we learned all about why the DC-10 went down. It's like two classes. They went through the entire engineering of the door and why it didn't work and blah, 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 and where all the hydraulic lines were and the whole bit. I mean, it was pretty fascinating. But he said that the original shuttle, this is now 1974, so they already had the thing on the drawing boards for like a long time. He said the original shuttle.
Well, it actually, if you go way back into the early 60s and maybe late 50s, you'll find something called the Dinosaur Project, Dinasoar, which was a reusable space plane. They'd been talking about this that actually was mounted on the, I mean, it looked like something out of Robert Heinlein, but it was actually, you know, it was mounted on the top of an Atlas booster. It looked like it had just been stuck on there as an afterthought. But it was a reusable space plane. They've been working on this design and the shuttle. I mean, you remember the old $6 million man intro?
Oh yeah.
With the, you know, I can't hold her, she's breaking up, and then it shows that sort of futuristic looking thing rolling down the desert. Well, that's one of the lifting bodies from that derived out of the Dinosaur Project that ultimately morphed into the space shuttle. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, he said the shuttle was pretty much, the shuttle itself was pretty much the original design, or very close to it. They actually had a picture. There was supposed to be, you know how they plopped the thing on top of a 747 and fly it from Edwards Air Force Base back to Florida? Well, they were going to build a big honking, essentially caddy to drive the shuttle up to, you know, 50,000 feet, drop it off, and come back down and fly. It was supposed to fly back down. There was supposed to be a pilot on it. It was going to be like, you know, a 747 with maybe, you know, two extra jets or something. I mean, it didn't look like a commercial plane, but you know what I'm talking. So they decided that was too expensive. And he said, and then they went with these solid fuel rockets. He goes, first of all, he goes, by the end of the day, he goes, this is 1974, he goes, 25 years from now, it would have been, talk about, he goes, we will have had a couple of accidents because these solid fuel rockets. I don't know if you know what those are, Matty, but they literally are solid fuel. You can't turn them off. Once you light them, they're like a firecracker.
Fireworks.
They just go. I mean, they're either going to go in one spot or going to go like they're supposed to go, but they're going to go because it is just fuel, right, Lou?
It's just once it's like a bottle rocket.
Yeah.
Once you light the fuse, you're going to burn the propellant. There's no, you know, liquid fuel rocket. You can adjust the thrust. You can adjust the fuel supply. A solid fuel rocket is just one big tube of fuel, and once you light the fuse on the end, it's going.
Well, so his point was, at the end of the day, it would have been way cheaper to complete that. And he said, because you're going to get a loss of life with this other thing. So talk about a predictor, huh? And he said we were much better off to do the project as designed. Well, the idea was if you fly the shuttle up, you drop it. It was like a much bigger X-15 project or X-1 project that what's his name?
Sure.
Chuck Yeager flew. They took him up in a B-29 and dropped it, and off you went, right?
Right. Well, and I mean, there was at some point, you know, they actually had the technology or were working on the technology to get rid of the booster. The thing was actually going to be able to take off from a runway and get, you know, get itself airborne and then point the nose up and then fire it. It's Burt Rutan's company that's built that gigantic airplane that drops the two or three, what is it, four man low space airship. That thing is still going on, and I think that's a viable design. The shuttle itself, with the solid rocket motors on it, I would have loved to have thought or loved to have heard this gentleman talk about where they actually lost the Challenger, because
this is way before that,
the failure of the booster, and it wasn't the rocket motor that blew the thing up. It was the fact that they launched it with in cold temperatures, and the seal around the solid booster, because they're not built in one solid tube, they're built in stacks. The seal around the booster froze up and cracked, and allowed, once the burn got to that and the rocket motor got to that point in the tube, allowed the escape of those jets that then exploded and blew the thing apart.
Well, that's what they mentioned in the...
I would have loved to have heard the engineering discussion on that.
Well, isn't that what happened? I remember the part in the Wright stuff. Imagine this, Matty. When they went, well, that was the X-1, right? The thing,
yes,
that broke the sound barrier. Well, evidently, when you put the thing together, you got all these expansion and contraction joints. And when you get up higher with the sun on it, it gets a lot hotter, right? So it expands. Is that the way that works? Even though the air is colder, doesn't something's weird. But
when you engage, this is the same issue you have with the SR-71 and why they built the A-12 and why they built those things out of titanium. At the speeds that you're going, once you push it above, you know, Mach 1 point whatever, the friction heating on the air surfaces gets to the point where they will expand. And the SR-71 is actually, but I assume the X-1 had the same issues, but the SR-71 was actually built with open joints on it that would expand in flight and
right,
seal the aircraft up.
Well, when you walk out to the thing,
it leaks fuel.
Yeah, I'm saying if you walked out to the thing is standing there leaking. And you look at it and you go,
yeah,
how the hell am I going to fly this thing if it's leaking? How am I going to get off the ground and blow it up?
I'll tell you a funny story about Yeager. I mean, and this is in Wolf's book, The Right Stuff. So, you know, the Air Force gets the X-1 up and they break the speed of sound. The Navy is doing its own research, of course, because they weren't going to share anything with the Air Force, and there was no organized, you know, organization, or there was no organization at that point that was sort of overlooking and overseeing all of this high-speed research. And so the Navy had one of their jets take off from a runway. They got far enough along that they could take a jet off from the runway, and it broke the sound barrier, one of their experimental aircraft. And so they said, we're the guys that really broke the sound barrier, because our aircraft, we designed an aircraft that could take off from, you know, whatever, from the ground and break the sound barrier and then land. It didn't have to be carried up. So I think they have the X1, you know, available, and Yeager said, well, hell. And basically, you know, like 2 days, walked out, took the thing, taxied it out onto the runway, lit the motor on it, got it up in the air, broke the sound barrier, came back, landed, and said, okay, there you go. So the kind of experimentation that was going on then, I think, was very much like what you're seeing Elon Musk do now, at least with Starship. And it's just, okay, we can calculate this stuff up to a certain point, but after that, we got to fly it. So, you know, let's do that and see what happens. And so that's what we're seeing. You know, NASA, this stuff is anathema to NASA, because NASA says, my God, we're taxpayer funded. And the taxpayers, if they see these things crash, they're going to go, what are you doing? You're wasting all our money. Nope, you know, nobody could say that to Musk.
Well, those things, though, the amazing part to me, they didn't have like any, it looked to me like they had no wings, but you're right, because of the speed they're coming down. The entire X-1 coming down was dead stick, right? Same as the shuttle. All the research on the shuttle landing dead stick, you know what that means, Mitty? There's no power at all in the thing. So you're coming down with just the rudder and the flaps.
Well, that's the lifting body. The shuttle itself, the body of the shuttle itself acts as its own airfoil. And so it's generating enough lift that you can actually fly it.
But theoretically, you're supposed to be able to get any plane down dead stick. But in reality, there's not many people that can do it, right?
Well, okay. So it depends. It depends on the shape of the aircraft. Some airplanes have what's called a very good lift over drag ratio, even with their engines out. That will, you know, and that's a known number, whatever it is. So you might have a lift to drag ratio that gives you a 10 to 1 or 15 to 1 glide ratio. So a 15 to 1 glide ratio means for every foot you drop, you go forward 15 feet, or for every mile you drop, you can go forward 15 miles. So that will give you a range if you lose all your engines. That'll give you a range where you, an estimate as to how far you can go, depending on your altitude. The trick is, you know, that maximum lift over glide aspect ratio, that maximum number may be having you fall at an airspeed that will break the airplane up if it hits the ground. So the trick is to extend your glide distance as far as you need to, but as you come in on final approach, the aircraft has the ability to flatten out and touch down without going into at a speed that's slow enough that you can survive the impact, but a speed that is not so slow that the aircraft will stall.
Well, the guys I thought were fascinating, and I heard about them when I was a kid, but I saw some of the stuff at Wright-Patterson. Maddie, when you see, you know, the World War II planes and stuff, they're all shooting the machine guns and crap off the wings, and it looks pretty cool. Well, in World War I, the only place that you could hang a heavy machine gun, because the rest of the plane was like fabric, right, Lou? That you had to hang it on the body of the plane, which means you had to shoot straight, which means you had to shoot through the propeller, right? So
yep.
the guys that were synchronizing the machine gun to the propeller, so you wouldn't fire the propeller off. Those guys would go up in the air like for almost like weeks. They'd hit the machine gun, they'd blow their propeller off, and they'd land. They'd try it again, blow it off, land. How many times did those guys have to do that before they finally got it? Like 1,000 or what?
So the original way that they fired through their propellers, in fact, some of the aircraft, I think it's a Newport is the design, actually had the machine gun mounted above the wing on a biplane, so they didn't have to shoot. They didn't have to shoot through the prop. excuse me. Once the guy that supposedly pioneered this was Roland Garros, but he actually put metal plates on the propeller, so that when the bullets hit the propeller, they just bounce off. They're only shooting 30 cal, so they weren't hugely destructive. If you could metal plate the propeller. But of course, that was horrific on the engine. But it did give you a few shots, you know, to take down an airplane. I'm trying to think who it was that synchronized the gun. I believe it was Fokker, the Dutch designer, but I'm not. I'm a little hazy on that. I should know that. But anyway, once they got the gun synchronized, all of a sudden they could actually shoot. But yeah, it to a certain extent it was hit or miss. The timing gears were something you could work on. But you know, the manufacturing might be a little off. You might get a gear that wasn't quite the spec. And you know, the gun might fire a little early, and when it did, your propeller came off, and that was it.
Those guys, they can get the thing down all the time, though, right? I mean, getting those things.
Yeah, but what you hope is you shot off both blades at the same time, because if you only shot off one blade and you had an asymmetrical prop wearing like that, you tear the engine apart, and when the engine starts coming apart, you're sitting directly behind the engine, you know, on those things. And it's not like you've got an armor plated cockpit. You don't. So you didn't. I mean, ideally, what you'd want to see hit both blades, and have the propeller just, you know, destroy itself, rather than having an asymmetrical prop weighing around on the end of your motor, getting ready to tear the thing apart.
Well, the last airplane thing, I watched this huge special on the Wright brothers, and the things that you think are sort of fascinating, you know, them actually getting a plane up in the air. I said, at the end of the day, the most fascinating thing that they did was their propeller design, even though they carved it, you know, out of wood, was within like a thousandth of a degree of what you would do by the best computer. That they, at the end of the day, the thing that was most fascinating things they did are two things. One was their wind tunnel that they designed, and the other was the propeller. How the hell did they do that with the propeller, Lou, by just looking at it?
This is back to something that you and I talked about with respect to archaeological discoveries that show that, you know, the ancients were measuring within tolerances of some of our best, you know, mechanical measuring devices. I just think we underestimate the ability of people to assess, eyeball, and feel what looks right, and if you'll pardon the pun, what looks right, and that carries over into their ability to manufacture by hand something that, you know, they have a tolerance for, or that has tolerances that are within modern manufacturing technology. And I think we underestimate the ability of people without those kinds of tools to do things by touch and by feel, with calculations, so that, you know, they produce a product that can match up favorably with what we can do here. I mean, the other thing the Wright brothers did, and we're still working this technology out, is, again, because their airplane is made out of wood and fabric, they could warp the wing. And they literally had the ability to adjust the lift on this thing. And this is a function of the fact that they trained in gliders. But their controls could warp the wing, change the shape of the wing surface so that they, like a bird, they could generate more lift or they could generate less lift. And that was an important way of actually controlling the right flyer.
Was that sort of before they had the flaps and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. But if you can warp the wing, cause the wing to change shape, because with metal, obviously, it's a much more difficult engineering issue. But if you can warp the wing, you have a lot more options open to you, and with fewer moving mechanical parts, theoretically anyway, a safer airfoil, which takes me back to now a story that I just read, and this will, I mean, they're all in the spring with lots of bad weather and snow coming in. There's snow here, supposed to be here today, by the way. I can't remember, I think it was in Indianapolis. Anyway, Frontier Aircraft, you know, it's snowing. Frontier Aircraft pulls out, goes to de-ice. The de-icing guy sprays the plane, goes, okay, you're good to go. They taxi out, and one of the flight attendants looks out the window and sees they still got something like 11 inches of snow on at least the wing that she can see. So she goes and pounds on the cockpit door and tells the front end crew, we can't take off like this. So they look out the window and they see all the snow piled under, so they go back. And of course, they would have all died if they tried to take off with that much snow on. And they taxi back, and it turns out that the de-icing company was running low on fluid, so they just did a very skimpy treatment of the wing and told the guy, you're good to go.
I've always felt pretty weird when they start de-icing the plane. I keep thinking, is this trip really necessary?
you look at that, and I mean, there was a Northwest crash where they didn't get the de-icing done properly. This was, about 30 years ago. And ice, you don't hear much about it now because we've got pretty good de-icing capability in the air. But once you get a foreign surface on the wing, like snow or ice, those wings are designed to have very specific performance characteristics at a variety of speeds. And the ice and any buildup of snow on that obviously completely distorts that. So we go back to the old concept of with enough thrust, you could fly a barn door. But if you turn the wings of your airplane into an effective barn door because they're not the airflow over the surface is disrupted and you're not getting the lift that you want, you better have enough thrust. And of course, they don't calculate for that. If the calculations for takeoff speed and abort speeds are all based on a clean wing. So if you don't have a clean wing, your numbers are off and you're not going to.
Well, we went skiing way back in the day. It was like I was in grad school, I think, and one of my buddies was in law school, so he had to take his final. So we drive out to Steamboat, and he's going to take the plane out and meet us and drive back with us. We lands in Denver, and it's snowing. This is back when they had, remember Mountain Air, way, way, way back?
Oh, yeah.
So they're all maybe there's these little prop jobs, right, with maybe eight people in them. So there's four other people sitting there, and he says it's snowing like hell. And he's like, I don't know if this is really necessary. Some guy comes in, he goes, he looked like a total beatnik, hippie beatnik kind of guy, beard, long hair, goes out, gets a broom, sweeps off the wings, big old broom, comes in and says, okay, let's go, I'm the pilot. he goes, the guy was an expert. That was one of those, those planes, they couldn't just take up and go over the mountains, they had to go through passes, right?
Right, well, some of them did, yeah. And again, with a prop like that, there's a little more, typically, there's a little more leeway in terms of, what can it be on the wing, because they're flying at a slower speed.
Okay.
So the airfoil can take, there can be a little more variance in terms of the airfoil cleanliness.
All right, Lou, we're going to have to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what the hell happened in the market yesterday with the massive turn from the morning in the NASDAQ, and yet other stuff is sort of fine. We're seeing now that the stocks that were absolutely leading the pack last year are getting pummeled, and stocks that, people never even heard of, those are still doing okay. And I want to get your opinion on what's going on between Powell and the government and the stuff going on with the $1.9 trillion and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, S&P futures down 11, NASDAQ futures down 42. I'm going to say we're at 12,636. I'm going to say yesterday morning we were 13-1 when we were doing the show. That's how far down we are on the NASDAQ. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Miller. We're on the board. S&P futures down 11 now. NASDAQ futures down 45, Dow down 38. Dow was down 100 at one point, but not anymore. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 55.4%, FTSE down 59. That's 0.9%. CAC around down 13. That's only down 0.2%, so not much on the CAC around. We're in Asia. Nikkei down, boy, these guys have been volatile. Nikkei down 628. That's another 2%. They were down 4% the other day. Then they came flying back. Now they're going back down again. Shanghai, which was up 2% yesterday, is down 2%, 73 points. Hang Seng down 643. That's 2%. It's really unbelievable how those guys are up, down over there. I don't know how well you can trade it. I've never traded over there, but it seems to me it'd be kind of tough. Just as a way of review, yesterday Dow was down 121.4%. That doesn't seem bad. S&P down 50. That's 1.3%. NASDAQ, however, down 361. This is after being up probably 60 in the morning when we're doing the show. That's 2.7%. That's a big move. Again, bonds, 10-year 1.46. The bund, minus 0.31. The Japan is the only one that's made a move up 0.2 basis points of 14.144. So they keep creeping higher, and yet the European one is not. It's kind of strange. Another thing I don't understand. Oil up 9 cents, 61.37. Brent up 4 cents, 64.11. Natural gas down 3, 2.78. So it's pretty far off its high of like 3.10. RBOB down a penny, but still at 1.94. So I don't figure on getting $2 gas anytime soon. Gold is up a buck 90, 17.17. Silver down 23 cents. These guys just cannot get out of their own way. Copper's actually down today, though, for the first time. Under $4. Down 18 cents, 3.96. And crypto, Bitcoin's down $1,500 or 1475 to 49,332. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no delays to speak of coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower looking good. Same for the Stevenson. Although we do have some slow traffic on the ramp to the Dan Ryan off the Stevenson. Apparently, there's some road work that's reducing the exit ramp to the inbound Ryan to one lane that's going on. So that's causing a bit of a slowdown.
It's going on for about 8 months, Maddie, and it's going to go into the summer. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, but so there's a little bit of a slowdown there, but everything else looking okay on the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Only issue in the area is off the expressways up in the northern suburbs. So there's a malfunctioning railroad crossing at Town Line Road. and Butterfield. That's causing a bit of a delay. But everything else quiet out there. Weather today, much colder than it's been the last several days today. A high of just 36 with wind chills in the upper 20s. Right now it's overcast and 34 degrees downtown. And then we start to warm back up again tomorrow and we'll be in the 60s by Monday. A little bit of a setback today. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 71. Right now it's clear and 53. In sports, the Bulls wrapped up the first half of their season heading into the All-Star break this weekend by beating the Pelicans down in New Orleans, 128-124. Bulls built a 20-point lead and then almost gave it up at the very end. They've done that a lot lately, but last night they were able to hold on. And now Zach LaVine will participate in his first ever All-Star game. And he'll also participate in the three-point shooting contest, so looking forward to watching that. Bulls are 16-18 at the halfway point, a half a game out of a playoff spot in Eastern Conference. Blackhawks were off last night. They'll host the Lightning tonight at 7 p.m. Chicago time. Coyotes beat the Kings 3-2. College Hoops, Northwestern, after losing 13 in a row, they've now won 2 in a row. They upset Maryland last night up in Evanston, 60-55. Notre Dame's season from hell continues. They lost at home to NC State, 80-69.
Chief. It is. So, Manny, is it true that they could have built the Golden Gate Bridge, tore it down, and rebuilt it in the time it's taken for this Jane Byrne interchange?
Well, if they would ever dedicate as many resources to any project here in Chicago as they did to the Golden Gate Bridge, I think we'd be fine.
But it's probably costing more.
Could be.
So let me just throw in that we are watching our own gigantic project here in Denver. It has been a 3-year, maybe slightly longer, rebuild of the Interstate 70 I-25 connection up here in Denver. And it's involved a monstrous amount of traffic disruption. And of course, I-70 is, you know, a huge east-west route. And so it's been really an adjustment. They're literally, you know, digging up, you know, neighborhoods and routing the thing underground and doing a whole bunch of other stuff. But it's been monstrous. I don't know that people contracting for it. It's an incredibly complicated project. I give them credit for being able to do it. At the same time, they are widening Interstate 25, which runs south out of Denver. They are north south. They are widening that for a total of like 45 or 50 miles, and that has actually been screaming in terms of how fast they've been able to get that done. So it obviously different engineering considerations. One project is much more difficult because it's going through an urban area, but really sort of a contrast in terms of style, because they are laying down concrete and getting, you know, the lanes expanded. You know, every time you make the drive, I make it about once a week, you can see, you know, tangible movement as you watch them, you know, take down bridges, do a bunch of other stuff. So I must say, here in Colorado anyway, the work pace seems to be slightly faster than it is in Chicago.
Once you got I-80 that goes east-west, you got 70. The next one is 40, right? That actually goes, there's nothing between
right.
70
yeah.
and 40.
And 80 is, 80 is problematic, and then 90 is the one north of 80, but those roads are problematic anytime after October.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, the stretch between Cheyenne and Laramie is brutal with the wind and everything. I've done that a whole bunch of times when I went out skiing, but I mean, even if it's dry, it could be a problem.
Yes.
You're up so damn
and,
high.
And I mean, it's not, the story I always tell is going across, driving a box truck, on a move to, or transferring a bunch of furniture and stuff to a house out here. And in the beginning of May, and getting to Lincoln and finding out that Interstate 80 was closed because of a blizzard.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, just west of us.
Yeah, it's a rough deal. Hey, look, I'm going to try and come at you from every different direction here, in a sense that I'm starting to get this feeling. I mean, when you see what's happening, I look at this stuff all day long. That's what I do for my clients, and you know, sometimes it drives you nuts, but I mean, the gist of the news feeds and whatever purports to be news. But you're starting to see all kinds of, I'm going to say, crazy stuff that doesn't match up. Even if you don't, now you're on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, you're not a news watcher all day because you have a job to do, but you're also not a 1. So you're probably in a high middle to high. But when you see what seems to be kind of crazy stuff, you see Fed people saying stuff that the person right after him says that that's like not true. You'll see the income disparity. You'll see all these different programs, and you don't know if they're going to hit to the right spot or not. You see the entire, I mean, these guys are special in the sense that they, with this $1.9 trillion thing, I'm going to say 90% of the jaw flapping among regular people has been about somebody making 80 grand does not deserve a check. Okay? So yesterday they actually lowered the number from 85 to 80. Right, that you can make. So if you get up to 75, the deal before was if you got up to 75, you got the full 1,400. If you were at 85, you got zero. But anywhere in the middle there, you were kind of prorated. So if you were at 80, you were going to get 700, right? Something along those lines. So then everybody does is worry about their neighbor making 82 and why that bleep should get a check. He doesn't deserve it. But it also, Lou, it is totally kept people off. I'm going to say that's $150 billion, maybe. This is off the top of my head, so you can't come after me on that one. I'm telling you it's a total guess. I'll bet it's 10 to 12% of the package. It has totally stopped people from looking at the other 90% that is going to God knows who in massive amounts of money. These guys are so good at it. Then you hear an Elizabeth Warren coming out and wanting a wealth tax. Now, I don't think anybody thinks that's a great idea. I don't think anybody likes listening to her. But it's not surprising when you've got $1.7 trillion going to people that just manage to get their finger in the pie or their lobbyists, probably way above what anybody deserves or needs. The fact that people in the airlines and places are still getting paid like their regular salary instead of the unemployment like everybody else. But I'm saying, Lou, is for her to say something like, it's obvious that people are seeing the fruits of this mess going to very few people, and they want a clawback of some kind. You know, I mean, it's not, she doesn't articulate it very well, but basically, I think what she's saying is, somehow or another, we've landed a lot of money on a lot of people that aren't really entrepreneurs. We're like, they were the inventors or this and any other thing, like in the old days. They just happened to land in the right spot and get government money, and now they're wealthy beyond the dreams of avarice. And we want some of it back. And I'm not so sure that's all that wrong. I mean, I'm saying that you're starting to get this, to me, this total chaos almost.
I see it as I do with the arguments of almost any demagogue. It's emotional. And she's a demagogue. It's an emotional argument. It's not a rational argument. It's an argument that just says, hey, you know, we got to enforce fairness. You're absolutely correct. This dithering over, you know, who's going to get their check is a complete and utter smokescreen. It's the equivalent of this stuff with Cuomo, where they're all raising hell about the fact that he acted aggressively with women who worked for him and with apparently women he just meets. And you know, this is boorish, horrible behavior. If he was an executive in a private company, he'd get fired. But the real issue with Cuomo is those nursing home deaths and covering them up.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But the sexual harassment stuff provides a screen for that. This dithering over the amount of money is providing a screen for what's really going on behind the curtain, which is, what is it, several hundred billion, right, in relief to California, New York, Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've mismanaged their pension funds so badly.
Yep.
The relief going to the they're basically telling the rest of the country, you know, buy out and make a contribution to these states that have mismanaged their pension funds so badly that they're about to go bankrupt. It covers up the fact that there are a couple of, you know, I think $100 billion going to federal employees who are going to be given basically extended employment benefits so that they don't have to weather the same storm that people in the private sector are.
Oh, sure, yeah, it's crazy.
I think you're exactly right. I think the wealth tax is stupid. I think it's pure demagoguery on her part. But it will resonate with the other ideologues that are apparently running the Democratic Party right now.
And I'm going to say, Lou,
if we get a chance to later, I want to talk to you about the impact of their Equity Fairness Act on athletics, I'd like to at least get some sports discussion in there.
Well, back up here, anyway, will you?
Yeah, go ahead. I saw the drop in the NASDAQ yesterday as a sort of a realization that our employment numbers are not coming back the way we hoped.
No, they're not.
They're coming back, but they're not coming back fast. And I think there's a realization that we're not going to have the kind of, you know, jump in employment and tax revenue that we thought we were. Certainly not comparable to the drop in employment and tax revenue that we saw when we shut the economy down last year.
Lou, I think you're. How can I say this? Because I feel I do just as badly as you do on this. Because I'm going to give you a shot here, but I'm also going to take a shot for me too.
You can't in talking about finance.
No, what I'm saying is, guys like you and me, we're old school. We're old. You know, not old enough. We're not good enough anymore. But when we see somebody with some money, all right, in our day, that guy worked harder. Maybe he went to school when everybody else was sitting in the saloon. Whatever it was, your immediate thought was that person A deserves it, okay? And because we grew up at a time when the economy was growing and everybody was getting a 3% raise a year. I'm going to be simple here, Mayberry, and the inflation was 2%. And every year things got a little better, and you got a 3% raise, and the inflation was 2, and if you worked a little harder and you got a promotion when the other guys didn't, and you all of a sudden you got a salary raise there, everybody thought you, quote, deserved it. Now, Lou, you look around, and I'm going to say I am no fan of AOC or Elizabeth Warren. Everybody knows that, has listened to me forever. But what they're seeing, Lou, they're not idiots. What they're seeing is, it's just like the banks after 2007, 2008, well, we got to get these people nothing but money. We can't let banks go under. They gave them everything on earth to the tune of like $1 trillion, Lou. I mean, massive amounts of money. Until finally the administration, whether it would have been Obama or anybody else, looks at them and said, hey, wait a minute. We overshot the mark. These guys got so much dough, now they're buying their stock back, and look what they're paying themselves. We're going to find these bleeps. We're going to find a way to find them and essentially take some of this back, which I think is a horrible way to do business, but people are, you're going to find some mask company here that's going to be charging the government $20 a mask when it's taking them 1 cent to make, and the rest of the population is looking at this going, hey, what the bleep, Batman? I mean, it's gotten so bizarre, Lou, that the idea of, I don't have a problem taxing that guy with a wealth tax. How do you get the money? It's my money to start with. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's not like you and I went out and bought one gas station, then we bought two, then we bought three, and did this all ourselves. That's not what's happening here. And I don't know how you stop it. I mean, and looking at it and saying...
Okay, so my take on this, and I'm growing up a little bit at you know, 60 plus. My take on this is that this has always been the way it is.
Not like this, Lou. Not like this.
That timing has always been the major factor, and luck. That there are lots of talented people sitting out there who don't get the breaks that Bezos or Musk or Gates got. But the short answer is, this is a better alternative in terms of equitable distribution of resources and in terms of creativity that's required for economic growth. This is a better way of rewarding this than almost any other system.
Yes.
And the only rationale I can come up with to do this, to say, you've got too much money. I mean, this is her argument. You've got too much money. It's not fair that you've got all this money. It doesn't matter whether you work for it or you got it by inheritance or timing.
That's the hole in her system. That's
going to take some.
That's the hole in
the
system.
And I don't like that. I don't think that's a working methodology for a successful economic growth or development.
I'm with you 100%. But I also don't like the fact that we're dumb enough to have Amazon for 10 years not have to pay sales taxes when other people do. That's an advantage that is insane, Lou. If you were to take the people the people are companies. In this $1.9 trillion plan, the people are companies, the law firms, the money managers, and I'm sure there's some of those in there, that have their name, they're behind somewhere on that bill. It doesn't matter if you're the best lawyer in the world or I'm the best money manager. In 5 years, they're going to be 10 times further along than you and I are. And that's just wrong, Lou, to that extent.
Well, this goes back to a fundamental discussion that you and I have had over and over again, which is you have the government reaching into all aspects of economic operation and business operation, and when you do that, it becomes possible for clever people who are almost always going to be faster on the uptake than the government employees who are charged with monitoring it. You're going to have clever people come in to exploit that. They're going to come in to exploit government money. They're going to begin looking for those government contracts. They are going to work this. They're going to work the system, and that's what happens.
Let me ask you.
Yeah. Do you want to penalize Bezos, Musk? Those are the two I can think of right off the top of my head, because local governments and states are giving them monster tax breaks to bring their businesses into the state.
I'm a guy who says I want private enterprise widening I-25 by you. But I also want a bid process that's fair and honest. Because there's nothing wrong with I'm very pro private enterprise, but I don't want a rigged bid program, which is what we get the time.
But I hear you, but that's a different issue than I got a bunch of rich people sitting over here, and I don't like it. I don't like it that they're rich and I'm not, and so I'm going to take some of their money. Warren's argument.
I don't think that when you talked about the tax breaks, you should have a tax system that is fair. I don't even think Caesar sat up there and said, this is your income tax, and somebody walking in, if he was a buddy of Caesar's, he got a 10% less. You think Wisconsin ended up on the long or short end of the stick of this fiasco in Kenosha, giving these guys all this stuff? They built this huge plant.
The Fox facility was going in there.
Yeah, do you think that, the city of Chicago, when they gave Wrigley or somebody all this stuff Goose Island to build this place, tax this and that, and your people don't have to pay state taxes. What was it, John Deere or somebody? That money goes to the place. Meanwhile, the guy next door is paying them. And oh, by the way, the same day or the same week, Wrigley closed down their plant on the south side, so the city was a net loser. Lou,
I get it. I mean, this is the same argument about losing baseball teams or losing football teams or hockey franchises. I don't think that's the problem that you address by simply saying we're going to tax rich people.
I'm with you. I'm saying it is a response to an incredibly, I mean, with the top 1% of people, I was reading the other day, have managed to make so much money during this pandemic that they're way up at the pandemic, and the rest of the people are way down. It's because of government. I'm saying, Lou, you can't trust. That's why there needs to be a bidding program. There needs to be a way. The way you stop people from getting money in government is to have the prices fair. Because the price is fair, there is no money for graft, right?
Well, my take, of course, is the way you stop people milking government for money and getting unfair advantage is you cut back on the amount of government involvement in every single aspect of the economy. And so our tax code, you and I have had this discussion many times, the tax code needs to be completely rewritten, because right now it is it's not going to happen because there are too many oxen that are going to get gored if we rewrite the tax code. But the tax code needs to be rewritten and stop using it as a tool of social engineering and business development, and just use it as a revenue source. And this is, but when you don't do that, you open the door for people like Warren to come in and say, you know, that we have to have tax fairness. And so our tax fairness is going to be looking around, looking for, you know, people we can stick a needle into and start doing a little wealth transfusion.
Well, but Lou, there's
the essence of people like Warren and occasional Cortex is wealth redistribution. They see the government's role as a social justice mechanism to redistribute wealth because in their mind, nobody needs to be a billionaire. It's not fair that there are billionaires.
I would say there was a concept. I'll be real quick with this.
There's
the economic theory was espoused by Milton Friedman, and I'm sure others. If Lou is so competent, or so smart, Lou, and I think in a lot of ways you are. If you are so smart to where you're special, to your Edison, your Franklin Roosevelt, you're somebody like that. We can't pay you enough. There's nothing we can. You can't pay the person enough. You couldn't pay Walt Disney enough for 27 Oscars, where the hell he won for. He made cartoon. But I'm saying their concept is called pure economic rent, and I don't think anybody, Elizabeth Warren, AOC, would bitch about Walt Disney being a rich man. Now, if somebody drops into the top of United Healthcare or someplace.
I bet they would.
Well, maybe.
I bet they would.
Well,
they can't.
I'm hoping they're not that irrational. But I'm saying, but when you drop into a guy who negotiates some deal with some health company where he's making $1 billion, and oh, by the way, if somebody else takes it over, he gets to walk away with like $100 million, and the guy's there for 6 months, you're scratching your head going, wait a minute, what exactly did this guy do, and where did that money come from? What came from people going to hospitals and paying too much for prescriptions, for God's sake, right? It didn't come from this guy doing it. He didn't invent penicillin. If he did, nobody'd care. I'd be happy to pay the guy anything. If he had a cure for... I'm saying we're seeing a lot of these really strange ways people are getting very wealthy right now, and people are reacting to it in a lot of ways.
I agree, and my point is that the fix is to look at the actual cause and not tax the effect.
I want the $100 million back. I mean, from not from Edison or you, but I mean, we've seen some stuff going on here that is bizarre. Look at the guys who at the Board of Trade, the guys who got, one of the guys signed a contract years ago that he came in and he signed a deal, and it turns out he wasn't there when the place got taken over, thank God. And his deal was he was going to get 10 or 15% of the entire amount of the takeover. Lou, the thing's been here 100 years. There's been thousands and thousands of people that have built that place. He's been there a week, and it's 15% is his? I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, I mean, my response to that is, who made the decision to do that? There are inefficiencies in every system.
Right.
And yeah, that's an inefficient decision. But is a better decision to have the government come in and
No. In private enterprise,
we want you to be subjected to our inefficiency.
No. We got a dash here, but I'm gonna split it here. I'm gonna say that's the Board of Trade's problem. It's unfair, but it's their problem, right? If the members are dumb enough to sign that thing,
they're
dumb enough to sign that thing. My concern is when it's government largesse, then and it's my money. I have a different view of it. I
understand, and that feeling is what is being exploited by Warren and occasional Cortex.
I wouldn't exploit it the way she is, but I tell you what, I want to stop it more than she does. Just saying.
I think I'm a little more cynical, but that's okay.
Are we
done?
Yes, we're done. Hey,
are we out of time?
Are you going skiing? What are you doing?
No, I'm not going skiing. The weather forecast is bad enough that the I-70 and the Eisenhower Tunnel here will become a giant parking lot.
Ugh.
Probably in about 4 or 5 hours. So right. I'm going to pass on that, but now we'll get up there.
All right, take care, bud. SP Futures down 650, NASDAQ Futures down 24. Come back a little bit. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board, and that song, Every Day, has some sort of meaning. There's something happening here with the market yesterday, and it clearly isn't exactly clear yet, but Dan's going to straighten it all out for us. Morning, Dan. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I understand Lou says he didn't. Maybe you're the guy who sold the NASDAQ during the show yesterday when it was up like 70 and bought it back on the close down like 360.
No, but not me, but yeah, definitely an interesting move. I mean, it's definitely been an interesting period. You know, I think the news, you know, over the weekend with the strong news with the vaccine and the new vaccine, the J&J vaccine, I think helped the market Monday. And then there's still a lot of volatility. It's not sitting, you know, it's you know, we're not going to get to where we're going without a period of volatility in here, and we're seeing it, you know, we're seeing something almost every week. You know, moves like yesterday and, you know, a week or two ago as well, with just a, you know, the sell off or buying coming from, you know, not necessarily making a lot of sense, coming from investors, I think, that aren't really sure what's happening. Although the future looks clearer to me, and I think it looks clear to a lot of institutional investors that we are moving in the right direction. Certainly, on the vaccine front, we're doing quite well. There's pretty much consensus now that with additional stimulus, we're going to, you know, see a continued rise in rates, although from day to day, you can't really look at it. You have to look at the long-term trend. And I think more importantly, what I've been thinking about, and what I think everyone needs to be looking at, is again stepping back from this very short-term focus that we have today, and looking at where we were even just a year ago, and looking at what we were thinking about, and even in the early part of 2020, January, February of last year, even though it seems like 10 years ago, when you think about where were our heads, well, what were we thinking about on the investment side, and what were we thinking about in terms of inflation and the markets? And just a year ago, you know, there was some concern about, especially when it came to looking at full employment and you know, low unemployment, and that triggering what we've been waiting for, which would be a rise in wages that would trigger more inflation. And that's where our heads were at, you know, a little over a year ago, that we're in this long-term cycle, mature part of the business cycle. At that part, we're going to start seeing inflation. We're going to start seeing a flattening yield curve. It wasn't quite happening, but that's where our heads were at then. Now we're looking short-term. We're looking at recovery from a pandemic, which is, you know, once-in-a-century event that has driven the market in all kinds of directions and really, you know, made it unclear for a lot of investors, you know, whether we're overvalued, for example, on the tech side, or whether, you know, any increase in inflation or in rates is going to impact our market at this point. So I think you have to look at both the short-term recovery, if you will, and then also the longer-term trend, which is still there. And as we have this short-term recovery, we're going to get back to that longer-term trend. We're going to start looking at things like, where are we seeing inflation? We're seeing it certainly in the, you know, the medical side and the education side. The consumer is seeing it day to day now, at the grocery store and at the, and the gas pump. Although that's not included in CPI, they're still seeing that. The question about wages, you know, again, we go back to that issue. And, you know, the issue of minimum, you know, minimum wage is one issue, but I think that's an issue that will take place over time. But I think the bigger issue is still this issue of globalization and productivity. And one call that we had this week with one of the companies we own, one of the stocks we own, is a company called Matson, and ticker symbol MATX. And Matson is a company that does container vessels, predominantly in the Pacific region. So they go from China to Long Beach and Oakland, and they also have they also do deliveries to Hawaii and Alaska and Guam.
Dan, how many companies are? There's only a few companies that are really in that business in a big way, right?
Exactly, and especially in the Pacific region, they have Jones Act, which basically gives them a certain priority over just anybody stepping in. So they have a you know, there's a barriers to entry. It's certainly a, you know, a high capital intensive business. But they actually had a great year, 2020. They had a really good year. And their year came from shipments predominantly from China to the U.S. and predominantly e-commerce and predominantly this, you know, sort of stay at home, you know, work on your house, household, you know, housing construction, items. And what that tells me is that the costs of labor are still that much more significantly cheaper. The cost of manufacturing is significantly cheaper in China. Despite the talks of tariffs and all that, these guys just sort of plowed right through, and they're not seeing any slowdown. They're actually, you know, seeing a continued increase. And those vessels, by the way, when they go back, they're empty. So we're not shipping, you know, we've never been a large exporter of goods, but that's not changing. So what that tells me is that we still have some struggles with seeing higher wages. I mean, that's been the issue for quite some time. You know, you look at certain industries and you look at kids coming out of, you know, school and undergrad and graduate school having to pay, you know, the student loans, huge student loans, but they might be getting a little more in their pay. But when you look at the average worker, there really still hasn't been a significant amount of wage increases that can justify longer term inflation. So I think from the Fed's point of view, they're looking at the short term and they're looking at rates, the 10-year going up and all that. And as I've said, I don't think it's going to go up in a straight line. But I do think we're at that part of the cycle. But they're also wanting to see more evidence that now in the longer part of this cyclical, you know, mature stage of the cycle, that we are indeed seeing more pressures coming on the wage side, more pressures coming on the demand side. And the two are going to meet, if you will, the short term and the long term, I think, are going to meet. And I think they're going to meet sometime later this year.
Is it possible that we could get Powell to read a monetary theory book?
I'm sorry.
Is it possible we could get him to read a monetary theory book in every single one?
Yeah, exactly.
It will tell you that inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. It has nothing to do with people getting a raise.
I know. And it's unfortunately that has been the focus. And I think, for whatever reason, it seems that that's been the focus now for years, and it's not really necessarily having a direct impact. So, I would agree. It's definitely a monetary issue. We're gonna watch what happens. I think, we're gonna hear from Powell again. We're gonna, sort of pay attention to what's going on with, any rate increases that we have.
If I may,
I'm not sure those are coming anytime soon, though.
Yeah, if I may, because you're on a roll here, and I don't really want to interrupt, but if I may, would you mind if I give you like a 1 minute somewhat of a history of what I think is the mentality is on the inflation with these guys and the wage part?
Sure.
I mean, I'm a little older than you, I think, but back in the day, if you started in, say, 70 when this really started, actually started probably a little bit before that, when we went off the gold standard. Was it Bretton Woods was what, 68, something like that, when we went off the gold standard?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I think even then as now, whether it's on purpose, not on purpose, I don't know, but the inflation is a very lagging indicator. Even though you look at the CPI tables, it looks like these guys are on this stuff like white on rice. The fact is, it appears to be lagging, that it happened. It's everybody notices it for like a long period of time, and then finally it comes in there. But it's also lagging on the other end. So the history of this is the Fed, to my opinion, the Fed was, I think I could back it all up too with stuff, but the Fed started pouring money in 68 to pay for the Vietnam War, right? Basically. And it took a while. It always takes a while. You see it popping out a little bit here, a little bit there. Nobody was getting a raise at that time. Nobody had right in their union contract any kind of a COLA provision or anything like that. And all of a sudden, the Arab thing happened in 71, right? And I'm a freshman in college. And all of a sudden, gas jumped from 29 cents a gallon to like a dollar or something. Like, holy bleep. I mean, how could that happen? What started to squeeze out there, then it went from there to food, but it was always because of the oil. It was never the Fed. It was always those dirty Arabs, right? Were screwing us, basically. But and then you got this little guy, Milton Friedman, running around Washington saying, it's not the Arabs, it's you idiots. You're putting too much money into the system. I'm going to say that there wasn't a union contract that got a COLA provision to 74, 75. So for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, people went without a raise in the face of inflation right in front of your nose. Just like right now. I mean, the people that are the average family's making 60 grand. If we have a 10% inflation or 6, that guy's not going to be making 66 next year. Actually, last year, some of the stuff did go up a little bit, mainly because of the markets and the checks people got. But by and large, it hasn't gone up. Well, at the end of the day, when I was already trading in 80, 81, the Volcker was squeezing the place pretty dry to where there was no inflation. But now you had the carry-on that if there was inflation 3 months ago, people are still getting a raise because that's the way the stuff was done. And that's what I did at Pullman. So people were getting raises that, I'm going to say, use the term, didn't deserve because we were already on the downslope of the inflation, and yet it was a lagging indicator. So now what you hear in people, especially people in their 40s and 50s, will say, no, it was wage inflation that caused the problem. No, it didn't. It had nothing to do with it. It didn't pile in there for like 6 or 7 years, only the last year or two, because you had this lagging piece where guys were still getting raises even though there was no inflation. Then the last 6 months, then yeah, probably the wage was the problem. But it never was the problem. For 95% of the issue, Dan, it was never the problem. The last 5 or 10% is the only part people seem to remember. Just saying.
And I agree with you on all that. It just seems to be in more major, a major focus in the last, over the last 5 to 10 years, it seems to be or at least certainly over the last 5 years, that seems to be the focus, and that was where the focus was even a little over a year ago, and I like you, I question that. I question why food and energy are not part of the inflation picture too, but it's, I question why, we're looking at wages as sort of being that final thing that's going to put us over, and it's really not, and like you're saying, it's really, we're looking in the rearview mirror, we're looking at inflation being a lagging indicator Inflation is not something that, you know, I think the movements that we're seeing now in the, with the, you know, the hike in the 10-year rate and, hike in real yields being, you know, people starting to accept that, I think this is a byproduct of the period we're coming off of. And, not necessarily indicative of what's going to happen in the future.
Well, Dan, I don't think anybody who listens to this show or listens to you anywhere else you're on is dumb enough, and I very seldom say it, is dumb enough to think that their hospital bill went up because a nurse got a raise.
Right.
I mean, does anybody really believe that? who could that guy be or lady?
Right, yeah, no, I know. Not likely, although, again, when you look at sort of the supply-demand, you look at the, you know, using nursing as an example, is, you know, huge demand for nurses. You would, that piece, if you will, is not as significant as some of our officials are making us think. You know, some of the, you know, the focus has been so much the last few years on what's happening with wages. And again, I definitely don't agree that that's part of the, as big a part of the equation as others do. I'm not convinced. I think what's a bigger part of the equation is what we're facing right now, which would be, you know, higher asset values, you know, certainly housing, other areas, you know, education, medical, other areas that are, going to impact the consumer, since the consumer is still 2/3 of GDP and still has a major say, if you will, in determining whether we have inflation or not. Their viewpoints are very important. You know, corporations and government being the other two parts, but I do think the consumer piece is important, and what's going on day to day is going to impact the consumer's view of whether we're actually in an inflationary period.
Yeah, you're starting to see people, and I don't know the answer, that's why I'm asking. We're starting to see people at least exploring the idea of an inflation type of corporate bonds. Like you can get tips. I don't know. Does anybody trade those things? The tips? I never have. But
the tips kind of disappeared for a few years, but they're still out there. They basically went into negative territory, and they became less popular. There was no yield there. And I think as yield comes back, there will be inflation-protected notes. The other one that I mentioned last time that would be, you know, sort of a hedge on inflation or a way to participate in higher rates would be floating rate notes, bank loan notes that reset every 6 months. So the adjustable rate mortgages, you know, is being a buyer as opposed to owning them, you're participating every 6 months if you believe rates are going up. But again, those are going to be more based on the short-term 6 month time horizon and not necessarily what's going on with the 10-year. The 10-year, again, the major impact is going to be the, you know, housing, mortgage rates, and we're not seeing anything yet. But years ago, I remember buying bonds that had resets in them that were longer term. So they would be, you know, you could buy a 10-year bond that would reset every so often based on where rates were. So that those products will probably be coming back. I think people need to be convinced first that we really do have inflation, that, you know, that there is a need for that, those products, and that this is sustainable, what we're seeing in the short term here. I think the Fed, and I think, you know, the Fed is looking at this and they're saying that what we're seeing now is just coming off the period of the past year, and what we're seeing now is not necessarily indicative of what's going on long term. I don't know if I agree. What I'm saying is I think we're seeing a little bit of both. I think we have to get back to where we were a year and a half ago. And I'll tell you, a year and a couple months ago seems like a long time
ago. Sure does,
we have to get our mindsets thinking like that again as we come out of this recovery.
Well, you know, you can see in this area,
Dan, pick up where we left off in terms of the global economy and realize how much of it's still intact and what were those issues back then that are going to drive the economy longer term.
Well, we just canceled, and I think this is Chicago-centric. I mean, I think we're a little crazed here, but we just canceled McCormick Place shows in August yesterday. I mean, we're not even planning on coming back here anytime soon. I mean, we opened the bars up a little more, so there's a little movement on that area. But yesterday, in the middle of the day, I snuck out instead of staring at the markets and walked two blocks down to the bank, and it looked like a neutron bomb had hit. Dan, I mean, there's nobody here. It's frightening, and it's no better. I mean, I'm going to say it's okay. Instead of five people in our building, there's 10. You know, it's not 300, 500, whatever the hell how many people are in this place. I mean, we're not even close to the next week being any different. To these the Fed places, the Federal Reserve's not coming back to like next year or something. I mean, the governmental places are the ones. I mean, those guys. I think they're going to get paid at home till hell freezes over. If they, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, how many people?
No, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. I think there's going to be a combination. We are seeing a lot more activity here in Florida. We're seeing a lot more, not only on the construction side, but a lot more. You know, we never really totally shut down, but there's more and more things opening. You know, I know the Red Sox are playing in spring training now, and there's a lot of a number of states, including some of the states in the Northeast, have actually opened, you know, restaurants and gyms and things. So I think there's been some progress. The areas that you know, seem to be lagging are, for example, Europe, that's still in lockdown because I think they're trying to figure out this vaccine thing. But here in the United States, I think the general, you know, really it is regional. I think the general movement is very positive, and where it's working already in parts of the country, I think we're going to continue, this trend will continue. I mean, assuming that there isn't any other, you know, variant or strain that comes up, I think we're moving in the right direction.
Well, Dan, what are you, obviously you've impressed me, with your research on places, you dig into, and you manage to find places that I wouldn't find, so I love having you, but, How do you find a landmine in these people's? I mean, how do you know at this point? I'll go back to, you know, Kramer, who I have issues with, but all he did was tell everybody how Eddie Lambert, his buddy from Goldman Sachs, was a genius, and he took the whole company down. You know, for God's sake. Yeah. I mean, how do you know that when you walk into a place that they don't have some big honking piece of real estate from a previous purchase or something? And by the way, nobody's paid rent in 9 months, and they're sucking at it. I mean, how does anybody even know? I mean, right now in Chicago, you read every day about the people that are not. Maddie, who was it yesterday? How many people are not paying rent downtown? And to me, it seems like there's a lot of anvils in the air, and they're going to land on somebody's head, and it's not obvious whose head it's going to be yet.
I agree. Yeah, I think me personally, having the experience on the distress side, you know, having done that since, you know, for 30 years now, helps a lot in understanding, you know, whether it be a small investment, like you're talking about, you know, say an apartment building, or whether you're talking about a company that's actually gone through a period of distress, and whether they have it, you know, what it takes to get through this period. For some places, I think it's going to take longer than others, just like the, think back to 08 and the parts of the country that got hit really bad and where the real estate especially became an issue, like places like Florida, where I was during the, I think it was called the foreclosure.com period.
Oh yeah.
And also places like Arizona that really got hit, harder than most of the country. A lot of people were moving, for example, to places like Texas at the time that did not have as severe an impact as we did. But the exodus that left here, you know, it lasted a few years, and it was a slow recovery. And you know, you'd go to other parts of the country and realize, hey, things aren't quite as bad here. And part of it, I think, is over, you know, people living above their means. You know, that's one of the issues is sort of, you know, the leveraging situation became an issue. I don't know that we're in that environment now. I do think people do live, you know, from a household point of view. If you're looking at an individual, say renting an apartment or a condo, say in Chicago, some people and a lot of people actually do live above their means. They don't have the 3 months saved. You know, they don't have the means. The owner of those buildings that is charging the rent doesn't have those means. You know, they're paying their mortgage and their property taxes, but they don't have a whole lot else beyond that because they've leveraged themselves. So that may not be as apparent as the leverage situation that we had in 08. But it's there, and there's definitely going to be a fallout from it. There's no question. but I don't think it's going to be a fallout that's equal everywhere. I think it's going to be
well,
a fallout.
I agree with you there. I mean, it's going to be very uneven. It just seems like, well, one was not in my lifetime, but I heard of it and I read about it. A normal business cycle is usually an income sort of shock. A company has a bad year, you know, all of a sudden they retool, next year they have a good year, and, you know, same way with a, but the depression, when it took people's money out of the bank and your wealth just, you know, it was a balance sheet depression. And I think the same thing happened in 2008. People had paid $250 for a house, put down $50,000, because everybody claims it's people who didn't put money down, but really, most people did put money down, and they're the ones that got hurt because they had money to get hurt with. They're down $50,000. That was either the money they got from their parents or something, their savings. Now we're running through that same thing again here. And I see people here in the city. Well, in this block, just an example, some of the buildings are owned by, I won't say the name, a name that most people would recognize. Okay. Now he has said to some of the restaurants, I don't care if you close for 5 months, I'm keeping you there. And by the way, when this gets better, I kind of want you back. So he's absorbing this in a couple places, this person. Or the place that Matt and I like to go, the Tripoli Tap. I'm going to say that they're going to survive. Nick and his guys have done a nice job. But I'm going to say when this is all over, Nick's bank account doesn't look anywhere near like it did when he started. There's a balance sheet hit to this that I don't think normal people like you and I necessarily see, because it's so rare. Usually it's an income thing. Instead of making $200,000 one year, you made $50,000. You're still up. Next year, you'll try and do better. I'm looking to see where the balance sheet holes are here, whether it's going to be a bank, whether it's going to be the guy who didn't charge the rent, thinks he's okay for a year, and something else bad happens to him, and then he's at, I mean, I don't know the anvil's hit yet, Dan, in some ways, and I'm worried about it.
I agree. No, I agree, and I think there's a fallout from, you know, some of it's a natural fallout from expansion, and there's more specifically there's the fallout from what's happened over the past year that has occurred and will continue to occur, and there's a question of whether some of it will be helped by the stimulus that we're going to be receiving. And what I'm seeing from just like my small world is clients and friends who are restaurant owners, clients and friends who've been in the hospitality industry, travel industry, people who, you know, talking to people who are in the airline industry and the cruise line industry, what I'm seeing is they really have, some of these people really have benefited from the stimulus, from the PPP, and that has been a holdover for a lot of people. It may not have trickled down to the smaller, you know, the much smaller players, the mom and pops, but it seems as if that's been enough of a holdover. And where do we go from here, I think, is the question, to, because like you're saying, this is, you know, a new normal. It's not necessarily just like a one-year blip. It could be a new normal for some folks who are struggling.
We got a dash here, Dan. One final, how comfortable are you going to be? Well, your taxes are going to go up to pay for the cruise line. Do I really care if? I mean, I'd like everybody to be in business, but I'd rather I'm in business than they are.
Oh, I agree. We're on the same page there. Absolutely.
All right, bud. Thank you. Good stuff.
All right.
Next week we'll dig in a little bit more of any of these maybe places that fixed income that you can go that are inflationary, either shorter term and or maybe does have some kind of a boost with inflation or something. We'll see if there's some around. SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures down 13. Be right back, Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain?
Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 2.25 now after these unemployment claims came out. 745, right, Matty?
That's right. Expected 750K, and initial claims were 745.
Continuing claims are still like 4.2, which is somewhat high. Obviously, we got the big
almost 4.3.
Yeah, we got the big number coming out tomorrow. We'll have Carl with us to go over that as we do every first week of the month, because sometimes it's not the first week of the month, but this week it is. We have the Dow futures. As soon as they come in here, they're up 8. So we pretty much turned flat here after these numbers came out. We were down. Over in Europe, we got these guys are down 36, and the DAX, they're down, but they're not down as much last time we reported. They're down 36.2%, puts you down 38.5%, kick around down 9, it's 0.1%, so they're up a little bit. Asia, however, whack, 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 whack. Nikkei down 628, 2.1%. Shanghai down 73, 2.1%. Hang Seng down 643, 2.1%. Frank, have you ever seen these guys this volatile? They were a couple of 4% moves on some of these things this week. One day up, next day down. Bonds, 10-year, 1.48, so it's up almost one basis point. One minus 0.30, so that's up a basis point. Japan up two basis points, 0.144. Interesting. They've crawled out of the cellar and they're up. They're like the Knights. Oil up 28 cents, 61.56. Brent up 24 cents, 64.31. Natural gas down 3 cents, 2.78. RBOB unchanged at $1.94. Gold is down $1.80, 17.14. Silver down 27 cents, 26.11. Copper down 6 cents, 4.08. But it was down, it was under 4 last time we reported, so they're back up over 4. And crypto, we gotta do crypto. Bitcoin down 1,349,428. Maybe we got for us traffic, weather, sports. It looks nice outside.
It does, but it's cold. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have an issue on the south side. A crash on the on-ramp from the outbound Ryan to the outbound Bishop Ford is causing traffic to use the left lane to get by, and that's causing some delays on both the Ryan and the Bishop Ford, so keep that in mind. But that's our only crash on any of the area expressways. No issues on I-57 to this point. Stevenson, traffic building, but no crashes to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Kennedy. Edens is all quiet. Lakeshore Drive is looking good in both directions. Off the expressways, there's a structure fire on the south side that has Harlem Avenue closed between 175th and 173rd, with crews on the scene. And then in the northwestern suburbs, there's a crash on Route 59 at Sutton Road. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, as Chief mentioned, lots of sunshine today, but very cold compared to what it's been the last few days and what it will be this weekend and into early next week as we'll get into the 60s. But today, a little bit of a setback as we're partly cloudy with a high of just 36, and it's windy out there, so it's going to feel like it's in the mid-20s today. But we will have some sunshine. Right now, it's overcast and 34 degrees downtown, or I should say partly cloudy and 34. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 54. In sports, the Bulls wrapped up the first half of their NBA season heading into this weekend's All-Star break at 16-18 as they beat the Pelicans on the road last night, 128-124. The Bulls are a half game out of a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Blackhawks were off last night. They'll host the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight at 7 p.m. Chicago time. Coyotes topped the Kings 3-2. College hoops, Northwestern has now won two in a row. They upset Maryland last night, 60-55 up in Evanston. Notre Dame continues to struggle. They lost at home last night to NC State, 80-69.
Chief, they folded up to 10, I think.
Yeah, they're an awful couple of years. Jesus.
By the way, just a...
They never unfolded this year.
No, they didn't. That spot you're talking about from the Ryan, they're both I-94, both the Ryan and the Borman, but one's the Ryan and to pass 95th Street, and then they split off into I-57 and 94 becomes the Borman.
If you drove by, it becomes
the Ford, then it becomes the Borman further down. But the right there, when that thing moves, if you used to drive by there, man, you probably never did. You see the oddest thing is Jay's Chips were there, and you'd see they'd bring in a huge truck full of potatoes. Well, instead of unloading it, you'd see the truck go way up in the air. They just dump the whole truck in the place. So you drive by and you do a double take because you're trying to drive watching the road. You see, hey, what is that semi doing straight up in the air? And that's what they did. And the guy who owned the place, more than anybody needs to know, was a total neat freak long before people, you know, some people were always into this cleanliness thing. They would run two shifts where they made potato chips and God knows what else. And the third shift, they scrubbed the place from top to bottom where if you walked into the first guy in the morning, you'd swear it was a brand new plant, right, Frank? Every night, that's what they did. They scrubbed the hell out of the place all night long. And
it was originally called Japs Potato Chips, and they changed it after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, and so what was
who
model?
Who owns them now?
They got the family. I think the guy died. The family couldn't wait to sell. I mean, I don't know.
They sold it to Frito-Lay,
yeah,
I believe, or Kraft, for $450 million. And the family bought it back for 30.
Really? Well, but now they just sold the brand again. The factory's not there.
Yeah, they bought back the brand. And then Utz just bought somebody here in town.
Yeah, I mean,
potato chips.
Yeah, they just use other people's chips and throw it in the bag. But what was the motto? Was what? Nobody can eat just one, Manny.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, put a bowl of those things in the middle of the table. I guarantee you, your guys could not eat just one.
I love Jay's potato chips.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
I love any potato chip.
I agree. Especially with some French onion dip.
Oh,
nothing
God,
better.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. That's
how I lose weight. I just cut potato chips out.
God.
Skinny doctor eating potato chips.
I never got into, like, the Cheetos and stuff, but the potato chips, I can't leave off. A lot of people like all this. All right, Frank. Massive move yesterday from being up in the morning to down during the day, and it was just... It was boringly relentless. There wasn't any like huge sell-off. It just went down all day long. I mean, I haven't seen one like that in a while. I mean, usually but literally we were just going down, we're going down 40 NASDAQ points every half hour. It just was kind of relentless.
Down 2.7% for the day.
Yeah. We started out up, which is even weirder. It wouldn't be as odd if we came in and the NASDAQ was down 150 points, but they were up 70.
And then it gets very difficult if you have a directional move on because you expect it to come back when it moves slowly.
You do. And then, of course, we still have the buy-to-dip mentality. And a couple times, there was one point where the NASDAQ was down 300 and the industrials and the transportation were both significantly up. And I don't know. This is strange. I mean,
well, we had the opposite happen the other day where the Dow Jones was down $180, and the NASDAQ was up a couple hundred.
I know we've seen it in Asia where one of them will be way down, the other one's way up. What do you? I mean, Mike was on the other day, and he's convinced that when you see this kind of shakiness and craziness and the volatility. Well, the VIX is up again today. It's pushing past, it's over 25, I believe. What the hell do I have in here? I got a 25.96. So call it 26. That's awful high, Frank. I mean, but so far, even the gold, which, you know, I keep pulling my hair out about, it keeps running from 1850 to 1730. And back to 1850. It's amazingly violent, but within a range. In the same way, really, with the market here. Although
the whole market, it calls for range trading right now.
Except for some
I'd
of the stuff.
I'd like to ask Russell about the 25 level versus the 11 level in the VIX a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, that's...
If they changed the calculation or if it's... apples to apples.
I bet it is. You know what's even weirder, Frank, is when you go out, because I've been putting a lot of money to work for people, and I, to be blunt, I got an awful lot of cash right now to put to work, but I'm having trouble doing it because as you go out, say this VIX is 26 or something, if you go out to like September, it's still 26. There's no, now because I mean every one of the indices. ETFs is a little bit different, but you got a big premium in the SPYs going out. If you go out 6 months, you're paying a 4 or 5 point premium, and if you're buying puts and selling calls near, but some of the other ones not so much. You can get the XLE is pretty fair across the board all the way out. I don't know why some are and some aren't. I mean, all I know is that it's different. But usually, it's one thing if things are goofy. And there's all kinds of stuff going on with the labor numbers and all this kind of crap. I mean, you can have a VIX that's up there, but then when all that stuff's over, you expect it to go down, start going down to where, I mean, you look at the futures on the VIX, and I look at the implied volatilities of the stocks going out on my machine, and I'll say, well, why is the June, why is it September sitting here at a 23? I mean, what where's the landmine between here and September or December or January might even be higher? Which,
oh, I think part of the landmine is liquidity. If there's nobody selling it, the VIX is going to stay high, or the implied volatility will.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, you're right. I think obviously there's more buyers than sellers. I mean, duh, right? It's always the case. But I'm just saying, I've seen an awful lot of really weird stuff in the market in my 40 years here, but. But even like long-term capital, all those kinds of things, Frank, you know, if, you know, long-term capital or the Russian default, those kinds of things, they were a landmine, but it was everybody, the mentality was, all right, here we are, beginning of March, this is a problem, might come to its head in April, you know, so we better get these puts up there, but by the end of the year, it'll pass, this too shall pass, and they drop right back down again. And, it's just not happening now. It's like there's a succession of landmines we can't even define. And I don't think I've ever seen that before. I mean,
I think this is definitely a Russell question.
Yeah,
his historical view on the on volatilities.
I mean, like I say, the 26 this week or next week or the week after with all the stuff going on in Washington, I guess I could somewhat justify that. I don't know why they think it's still going to be here. I mean, by all stretch, the COVID thing is on a positive note, right? I mean, there's no question that it's not like, are we really going to have a vaccine? I think we do. We have like three of them or maybe four, and they seem to be working. The numbers and stuff, I might disagree with some of this stuff, but the fact is they are working. If you look at the best chart I've seen yet, Frank, is in Britain, where they're giving them more to people over 65, well, I seem to be better at that. But the amount of people over 65 that are testing positive or are sick from COVID is dropping like a stone. So it's clear from those charts that the vaccine is working, right? I mean,
problem I see is a third of the people aren't getting the vaccine, and that makes them a petri dish for variants. If they haven't had it,
that's true.
It's still
by any stretch, it's better than it was 6 months ago. Are we ever even going to have a vaccine? Right.
Right. I'm going to go to Gibbons in probably a month.
Am I invited? Are you buying?
Wait, 1 for 2 will get you in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. So I guess I might get invited, Manny. Is that what I should take from that? But Frank is always, the credit card comes out very slowly, shall we say. Who do you think?
Well, I'll do it when I cash my check from Stocks and Jocks.
There you go. That's fair. But if you're in here, you used to be able to get coffee. You can't even get that anymore because the place is closed in the morning.
What is?
The Dunkin' Donuts. It doesn't open before, so Manny and I are coffee-less. Have been for months. The only time we get coffee is in Russell.
Oh, come on. There's a coffee shop in between your place and work.
Oh, we're not going to get out of the car and get it.
Hey, I have a coffee pot that'll brew it in a minute and a half.
Oh, God.
With very hot water. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, leave it to you to be some high-tech dude. All right, tell us what's going on.
My kid got it for me.
Oh, all right. Well, all right, so what's going on in this market? Are we buyers? What has caused the Apple and the Microsoft, the darlings of the world? Apple's off over 10%, maybe more. They topped it, what? We topped at 145. It's trading 122. Microsoft sort of the same way. The darlings of last year are not the darlings anymore.
Well, there is the chip shortage right now, which is impacting sales.
That's true.
And Apple's supposed to announce new products this month, and I haven't heard how the chip shortage is going to impact the availability of the new products. So there's a slowdown before an announcement usually in Apple.
I have some clients that want to get in the XLE, Frank. The thing has been on a tear this year. I can't believe that the oil stocks are the best in the, well, certainly in this year, but in the last probably 6 months. Is this as far as it goes? It's trading 50. What do you get down at 28 or something? I mean, is this it? Is 50 a good entry point, or is it way too high here?
It seems high given that different auto companies are announcing that they're going all electric. Volvo did last week.
Yeah,
2030, all electric. GMC, all electric.
Meanwhile, we're tearing down power plants as fast as we can. So what do you think would happen in the state of Texas if every car in the state was electric?
Well, if that's what you have there is electric heat. You think that with natural gas, you'd have natural gas heat.
You would think. Well, yeah. Well, I'm going to say that below southern Illinois, would we even have a furnace? We'd have a heat pump, wouldn't we? They're electric.
I really don't know what they have down there. I know that Texas doesn't do it right. Think how much money you could make as a builder if you don't have to put in insulation.
Well, I have a heating company that sends me stuff here, and they claim that everybody should have a small furnace and a heat pump. That even in Chicago, like out of 365 days, you're gonna use the heat pump on its own 301 days or 295 or something.
I think it depends where you live. How far down do you have to go for a heat pump?
No, I'm not talking about thermal. I'm talking about a heat pump. It's the air conditioner in your heater.
Okay.
But it only raises the temperature 40 degrees. So if you're going to have places, you know, in Chicago, that's not good enough. But basically, it is good enough virtually the whole year. Except for this year.
Well, Maddie was talking about how cold today was going to be, and I was thinking 2 weeks ago it was 40 degrees colder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was...
That's true.
We
got spoiled with like three or four, you know, 45, 50-degree days in a row, and now 35 feels really cold again.
Well, the piles...
Yeah, but there isn't any snow left.
Well, that's true.
In the alley where they piled it up at our place, the original really wet snow, there's still piles of it, not huge, but if you run into one of those, it's like running into a boulder. That's how much water's in there.
Oh, yeah, and in the shade, too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
My oldest went to Lawrence University up in Appleton, Wisconsin, and they still have piles of snow in the parking lots in May.
Yeah, I don't...
Green Bay.
No, thank you. By the way, I did want to read this note from a listener real quick, Chief, based on our vaccine discussions that we've been having all week. With our various guests, but he said, this is from New Ulm 55 on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks and Jocks. He says, thanks for addressing the question. Fun discussion. I get Chief's point of view and agree on the C grade on the studies regarding J&J, but I will take safety profile over efficacy because I don't mind if COVID is just a mild cold. Keep up the great work in addressing the hard questions.
Well, yeah, I think what we try and do is dig up. Everything has its strengths and weaknesses, and the idea is, you just, why should we be in the dark? I don't like being in the dark that much, even though we all sort of are to a certain degree.
It's a constant in life. There's variables and constants, and in the dark is the constant.
Well, especially when you have, maybe I'm just getting jaded. When people are on TV all the time, I mean, they used to be, and now they let people on for like a half hour, because I think they're having trouble getting guests, because nobody's flying into New York, right? People always, you know, as you get older, everybody always kind of talks their own agenda a little bit, some more than others. I can't believe the steady stream of people just talking their own portfolio right now. Was it always that bad, or am I just noticing it more?
We notice it more because media is ubiquitous. You know, whether it's Twitter or Instagram, it's just on and on and on. So everybody with an agenda gets to push it. And the only people who aren't allowed to push it are penny stock people.
Or if you're registered with FINRA, right?
Well, all of us are registered somewhere.
But it's so bizarre. I mean, for me, you know, I can rattle off the tests I have, and there's a whole bunch of them. For me to say we made this much money last year on some strategy, first of all, I would never do that on the air. But I would have to document everything I did, and if I had three different strategies, I'd have to let you know how the other two did. I couldn't just trumpet the one that did well, because I would hope if I had three different strategies, at least one would do well. And yet, you know, they're so strict in our side of the industry, yet other people don't seem to care. They'll tell you something, you know, whatever. They'll pee on your shoes and tell you it's raining. I mean, they don't seem to care. Guys are talking stuff.
The reason that takes place is the oligarchs in our industry are trying to load us down with such a level of paperwork it puts us out of business.
Well, that's true. But
and
I mean,
we know who the oligarchs are. There's like five people left.
Oh, yeah. Well, the idea that this Bitcoin, as soon as somebody buys it, they're the biggest proponent of the damn thing. And not, there isn't a person on there, I guarantee you, there's not a person on there that knows what he just bought. Because what did you just buy other than something going up? They don't even know who invented the thing. Allegedly, some guy landed in a saucer and did it, went back in the mountains or someplace.
After he built the pyramids.
After he built the pyramids. I hope people in there don't lose money. I understand what the government's doing, what they're doing with their currencies, that maybe there would be an alternative currency that somebody would think of that would be based on something. I mean, even tulips were based on the tulips, right? I mean, there was a tulip at the end of the rainbow.
I thought it was a pot of gold.
Well, that's a pot of gold. Well, but the tulips got up so high.
Only if you're Irish.
They were worth more than gold there for a while, I think.
Yeah. Maybe.
But I mean, some guy buys Bitcoin. He's a big. You should buy Bitcoin. But why? Because I just bought it, and you need to pay more than I did, so I can sell it to you. Oh, okay. That's been around since the what tree? For God's sake!
Didn't Russell tell us yesterday that his own wife was promoting her own book on the show yesterday because she owned Moderna stuff?
Russell goes, yeah, my wife was promoting Moderna because she bought some stock in there.
He goes, even she's talking her own portfolio.
he was funny. She was great, wasn't she?
Yeah.
I mean,
I couldn't help but think, though, that when you talk to healthcare workers, and I don't think this is any fault of their own, and I don't claim to be certainly anywhere near the expertise that they have, but when they're only seeing the people that are really, really sick every day, of course, they're going to have a viewpoint of this can be really, really bad for anyone because that's what they're seeing every day. They're seeing the people that are in the ICU with this, and it's really, really bad. I think if they saw, you know, out of 100 people, however many of those were really, really sick, maybe they would have a different view. I don't know.
Well, the funny you should mention
it. We live in a 10% bubble, the three of us.
Right.
I see what it does with – I went to a heterogeneous high school, and the people of color who I went to high school with have been decimated by this.
I'm sure they have, yeah. And I feel like everyone kind of lives in a bubble depending on what your situation you're in, especially now when we're stuck at home and have been for the last year. You're really in a bubble. I mean, you really and I try not to be, but it's hard not to be.
Well, when I was at the doctor, and I thank God, I'm off blood thinner, so I'm fine. But I was talking to the guy's nurse, and she said, well, when you fight with cardiologists about getting off a blood thinner, says you have to understand that even though there's only like a 1 or 2% chance of a stroke, all he sees are the strokes. So he's going to have a different view of it. You don't see anybody who has a stroke. You just right. see the people walking around. He gets to see all the strokes. And that's why his point of view is way stronger than you would ever guess for something that's a 2% chance. And which is
they also look at morbidity in addition to mortality.
Right.
Yeah.
I've been on the highest level of a statin for, gosh, almost 25 years. Well, it was all about
morbidity. Russell's wife sees the bad COVID cases. She doesn't see the person who, you know, took an aspirin one day and not blew it off in a week. I mean, so she's going to be more concerned about it than maybe the average person.
And then other people who maybe had it and it didn't affect them for whatever reason brush it off too much because they don't see the bad cases.
Right.
And so everyone is sort of in their own bubble.
Well, absolutely.
And the answer usually, as always, is in the middle somewhere, and we're trying to find it.
Well, isn't that why we're here,
Manny? It's just a bad cold. Here's a question. Why did Melania and Donald get COVID vaccines right before they left the White House, if it's no big deal?
It's a good question.
I don't know.
Well, he was pumped full of all kinds of crap, so I think he knows it's a big deal, no matter what he says.
I would think he would have the antibodies. Didn't he just have it?
Hey, rules are not for Donald Trump.
Well, that's true.
We already ascertained that 40 years ago.
All right, Frank, thanks, bud. S&P futures down a buck. NASDAQ futures down 4. We've been all over the place, and now we're almost unchanged. Be back tomorrow. We'll have Mr. Carl Denninger talk about the labor numbers.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.